some reflections on the life and work of Percy George Knapman, MBE, BSc, FIC, by his daughter, née Madeline June Knapman, now Cox. He was the last superintendent of the Royal Gunpowder Factory, the RGPF, before it closed down in 1943. After that, he went to London to the War Ministry in Adelphi House, the Strand. He commenced work at the RGPF after leaving London University in 1912, where he obtained a first-class honours in chemistry and physics. He first worked in this laboratory on general analytical work, testing raw materials and explosives, carrying out stability tests on gun cotton, also known as nitrocellulose. He then studied details of manufacture of gun cotton, nitroglycerine, and thus cordite, which is a mixture of all these and minor compounds. The war of 1914-18 obviously created an enormous demand for cordite, the propellant used in shells and cartridges. So there was a lot of pressure on my father as he was given charge of the cordite section in 1916. The years following the war were a slack time as there was less employment and work of this nature was down to a minimum. But in the 1930s it became clear to those in the know that another war was very probable. And so he, with many others, spent longer hours preparing for the needs of the factory once more. I am now paraphrasing from my brother's book entitled The Trail of the Past, which is a privately published family history of the Knapman family. He says, after the First World War, only small quantities of cordite, which was the British propellant for shells and bullets, was required. The workforce was reduced and the redundant A plant was shut down. From 1919 until 1934, the factory just ticked over. My father worked in the gun cotton and acid sections, so he had acquired experience with all the main ingredients from which cordite was made. He carried out research into the composition of cordites, this work successfully ending with a new, better stabilised propellant known now as Cordite W after Waltham Abbey. From 1934 to 1939, the factory was working hard against the eventuality of war. In September 1939, my father was made superintendent and we moved to Government House, Highbridge Street, Waltham Abbey, so that he would be easily contacted and able to oversee everything. Government House was built in the 1880s for the Army Superintendent and was a very large building standing in 5 to 6 acres of grounds, having outbuildings, including a coach house where my father garaged his car when it was laid up during the war because of the fuel rationing. There was a paddock for the horses, an orchard, a huge lawn, a large vegetable garden, many shrubs and an overgrown tennis court. A tributary of the River Lee flowed through the grounds from Bowdermill Lane under Highbridge Street and eventually went on into the factory from the boundary of our grounds. There was a rowing boat in its boathouse, which I was able to use. In fact, it had become a tradition that the boat was named after the daughter of the present superintendent, so I was delighted on my first visit to see the June moored there. The boat was really intended to be used by the superintendent in a case of emergency, i.e. if the road was blocked. Actually, the road was blocked when the V2 rocket fell a few yards from the house, but I doubt the boat was used. I would row up and down the river, past other factory houses' gardens, and stop and exchange some of our apples and pears for their plums and greengages, of which we had none. The surplus of produce from the factory gardens was always sent to families of needy workers. During the 1920s and 30s, some of the then unemployed workers tackled the huge task of making the overgrown gardens beautiful. They were glad of the work instead of being made redundant. As superintendent, my father had to attend all the factory social events, such as boxing matches, which were held in the town hall, and dances and concerts in the drill hall. This was situated next to the army superintendent's house. My mother organised parties for the workers' children and was very good at obtaining sweet coupons from everyone far and near, plus unobtainable things such as oranges and bananas from a local spiff. I enjoyed the dances as I was in great demand, being the super's daughter. I was only 17 years old when we went there, so I was able to enjoy the popularity. I remember one concert where Tutan Tessie, a well-known comedian from London, was entertaining us when the siren went. She just carried on with her act, slapping her huge tummy and thighs, and no one got up until she finished and suggested that they filed out to the shelters. Another thing very few people knew about Waltham Abbey was that just over our boundary wall at the back lived a certain Mr. MacLeod, who had a small swimming pool in his large secluded garden. Various friends were invited to enjoy an afternoon there, but some, like me, were unaware that you were expected to swim in the nude. I was at first very embarrassed, but though I never told anyone, least of all my father, I really quite enjoyed it. From 1940, when there were air raids at night, my father, mother and I used to go along Powder Mill Lane beside the river to a factory shelter by the AK-AK gun. The shelter was by the AK-AK gun near the lodge. The lads who manned the gun enjoyed our company and we brought them cakes, etc., and it made a little change for them. They used to say, "Nothing ever happens here." But in 1942, a landmine did drop in the village. And in March 1945, a V-2 did a lot of damage. When it became obvious that the war was not going to end soon, the factory built us a small shelter to sleep six in, right beside our back door. This made life a bit easier, as we no longer had to trail down Powder Mill Lane every time the siren went. However, in the big shelter, we had at first used with the factory firemen and policemen and their families. The evenings had been quite enjoyable, although sometimes we were there from 6 p.m. until 7 a.m. It had been built to sit 60 people, sitting on forms, but it dwindled to about 20 because some people would not go in as it was shelter number 13. Those of us who were left were able to stretch out on the forms or sit on deck chairs with extensions for our legs and made things quite comfortable. The shelter was never hit, although we could hear the doodlebugs going over, which was quite scary. The damage was quite bad when the V-2 rocket fell in Highbridge Street as it demolished a number of buildings, including Carr's Mill, the courthouse, and a number of old cottages and almshouses, the Ordnance Arms and the Drill Hall, where we used to go for concerts and dances. In 1941, my father was so concerned about the situation of the war that he wrote a letter which was sent to every worker in the factory.
From the Superintendent, Royal Gunpowder Factory, Waltham Abbey, January 1941. Dear, this is a space for the daily members of staff, so it was individually addressed to each person. The year 1941 is going to be the most dangerous time this country has ever faced in its history. Because that is so, I feel it to be my duty to give a personal message to every member of this factory. The British people are putting up a grand fight, but we must face the fact that it's going to be a very near thing. For years, Hitler has been piling up guns, tanks, aircraft, shells and bombs for this struggle, and we have not yet caught him up. Our fighting men are holding the enemy back until we have British quantity as well as British quality. They do not look on their work as a matter of so much work for so much money. For instance, when a fighter squadron has shot down, say, three enemy planes, unquestionably a good performance, it does not come down satisfied with its efforts. It carries on so long as ammunition and petrol are left, if there are more of the enemy to be gone after. That is the spirit that will win the war, and it is needed all over the country. These service fellows are putting all they have into it. I want you to ask yourself this plain question: am I doing the same? If we in armament and explosive factories fail to back up our fighting men with everything that is in us, we shall let them down and we shall lose this war. If enemy guns and aircraft can hurl their streams of shells and bombs while ours run short, that will mean defeat and the fruitless death of thousands of our brave lads. The blame for it would lie at our door. A great deal has been accomplished in 1940 under difficult conditions, but without any lowering of the quality of our products or relaxation of proper safety precautions, a considerable and much needed increase in our output can be achieved, provided that all of us are prepared to pull our full weight and work together as a team. It is with complete confidence that I call upon every one of you to work in 1941 as you have never worked in your life before. Yours sincerely, signed, P.G. Knapman.
The resulting increase of production prompted a letter from 10 Downing Street, which said that the Prime Minister intended to submit Percy George Knapman's name to the King with a recommendation that he be appointed a member of the Order of the British Empire. We were all very proud of this, although my father said very little about it. He received the MBE medal on the 12th of June 1941. My brother and I were very disappointed not to have been able to go to Buckingham Palace, but my father did not feel it was appropriate for either of his children to disrupt their work. Reg was working as a chemist at another ordnance factory, and I was at college studying to be a teacher. He wrote a second letter in January 1942. In the second letter to the workers, thanking everyone for the work they had done, he said that 1942 would be a critical year for the British people and the Commonwealth and its allies, and to work to the utmost of their ability. Reg Knapman did not know when it was decided to close the RGPF, but he imagined that the levels of production of cordite in 1942 at Bishopton, Wrexham and Bridgwater had made Waltham redundant. However, by 1943, Waltham's other productions, TNT, picrite, fuse powder, gun cotton, nitroglycerine and tetryl ceased. At the official closing of the factory, my father was presented by the staff a prestigious red leather book which contains photographs, signatures and pen and ink sketches of the factory and a brief history of the RGPF. A CD-ROM showing the contents of the book and photos of various people in the different departments in 1943 have been given to the Royal Gunpowder Mills for reference purposes. With the war over in 1945, the research department, which was the owner of the RGPF, decided that Government House was too large for one family, so it was converted into flats. Two flats were made from the main part of the house, and a third small dwelling from the original servants' quarters. My father retained the use of one of the flats until he retired from the Ministry of Defence in 1950.